bonjour and bienvenue to the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition in association with Spotify. Just like the Yanks, we're hoping for a quick start, a riveting fight throughout, and some space right at the end to keep you wanting more. I'm Kate Borsay, and in the studio to guide us through this electric quarterfinal. In the blue corner, it's our superstar defender playing for Chelsea, and England, it's Anita Asante. Welcome back.
Hello, hello.
It feels like it's not a podcast without Anita at the moment. And in the red corner, it's women's football journalist writing for the iPaper and World Soccer magazine and many more. It's Glenn Moore.
Hello, great to be back.
Welcome back, Glenn. Incidentally, those are the coloured chairs that you're both sitting on, as this was written before you both sat down. How weird that you've chosen your correct chair. I think it's you gravitating to the blue, isn't it, Anita?
It must be.
It's 44 degrees in France, but it was white hot at the Parc de Princes in Paris this evening as Le Grand Match took centre stage. And what a final that was. Sorry, quarter final. The holders have knocked out the hosts and sent them, well, they're already home, aren't they? The USA straight out of the blocks thanks to a sneaky free kick from Megan Rapinoe. She followed up with another one in the second half, Tobin Heath, the provider.
Morgan leads it. Heath in the box. Two runners across. It goes free. Rapinoe shot. Go!
Not until that point did France finally shake off their shell shock. A classic Wendy Renard header.
Oui. 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 Oui.
Brought it back to 2-1, but it was too little, too late, and France exit the tournament. So, Anita, it was dubbed Le Grand Match. Tickets on sale for up to $3,000, according to American media. Did it live up to its billing?
I mean, to be honest, no. We were...
Kill it right there, Anita.
You can also stop now.
I mean, the anticipation and everything, I think, hyped it even more. But, of course, to brilliant sides, and that can happen. You know, they're going to cancel each other out in a lot of situations. But, you know, I think we were all expecting France to come out with a bit more energy and purpose in the first half, and they were a little bit too slow to get going.
I think you're being kind to France. Glenn, did they disappoint?
They did. I don't think the French handled the occasion very well. They've had a bad record in the last decade of choking in big matches against teams often they had more talent than.
I just didn't want them to fall into that French cliche, though. But they have.
They have. And, I mean, they've often struggled against... I mean, actually, they've lost, I think, the last eight tournaments when they've been one of the best sides they've gone at. In six quarterfinals, two semifinals, only the second time against America. So it's not as if it's America knocking them out every time. They've lost all sorts of teams, including, of course, England at the last Euros. And it just felt like the occasion was too big for them.
Are there question marks over the commitment of some of the French players, or is that just their style, Anita? Because they felt to me like they lacked urgency. And of course, the USA are such a physically strong team, very dynamic going forward, that France just felt a bit slow to me today.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you. But sometimes I think, like Glenn has said, you know, the occasion can overwhelm you and you get the energy can be sapped from you because of the pressure and expectation. And so, I'm sure mentally they wanted to give that energy and that pizzazz going into the game, but it just didn't manifest for them.
Why didn't it? Was it the heat? It was 31 degrees in Paris. We know it's been hot there all day, so the humidity probably made it feel even hotter. Is it the weight of expectation? Did Diacre get her tactics wrong? Why didn't it click for them?
There hasn't been that much rotation within the French team, and they have played a lot of football. One of the problems of being at home, I mean, home teams don't actually win World Cups very often, male or female. And you're surrounded by it. You can't get away from it. It's everywhere you look. You turn the radio, you turn the television, you pick up a newspaper, you go on the internet. It's everywhere. And that expectation, some teams will thrive upon it and will do well in it. But a lot of them, particularly if you haven't got any experience of winning, and the French haven't got any experience of winning. I know the Lyon players, which is most of the team, win regularly, but then they're generally the best team on the pitch by distance. And I think that sort of saps your mental energy a bit. And they look mentally tired as much as anything out there tonight, rather than physically. A combination, I guess, playing a lot plus a mental drain.
We did call it, didn't we, Anita, with that mental pressure. And, you know, although we'd mentioned it for their last game. We'd said, you know, Diakra really needed to protect her players in the lead up to this match. And it must be so hard because it is the final, as we're joking. It was what we probably would have liked to have seen for the final, maybe. But it was being hugely hyped all over the world, hence the price of the tickets as well. And it seems that, you know, even the best managers, or even with this amount of hype around it, it's impossible for you not to feel the weight of it.
There were one or two times, little 5-yard passes, 10-yard passes, simple passes that players of this quality would be able to make, you know, day in, day out, all the time in training, which they weren't making, which reminded me a little bit when England played Iceland, and suddenly it's just this mental block. Yeah, it's not working. You get mentally drained. I mean, that's not entirely a comparative match, but that sense that it's all going wrong and you're not, the concentration goes and you're not able to play a simple pass.
Defensive errors by France as well for USA's second goal, Anita. I know you picked that out during the game.
It was a situation when Tobin Heath got free in a simple give and go, and the whole back line gets dragged out, and I think Wendy Reynard's on the wrong side of her player. Mbok Bathy gets pulled out, the fullback gets pulled across, and they get a simple tap-in situation. Again, it could be a lack of the mental fatigue again, and, you know, the concentration level and all that that played a part in that. But they were also chasing the game, so, you know, that can happen. The spaces open up.
Are the players like for like as talented as each other?
Absolutely.
So absolutely evens.
Absolutely. I don't know if the French believe in their talent. This is part of it. Like, I mean, I think domestically, yes, the Lyon players, they have that. But as a national team, like you're saying, when, you know, the US are used to winning and they believe they're the best.
So is the difference then a mental game?
I think that's part of it. Like, they are so talented, and a lot of those players are really gifted on the ball. But you want to see them really believe in it and show it and pose those challenges to those US players.
On pure talent alone, the French have won the last four tournaments.
Yeah.
Well, World Cups, Euros, Olympics, on pure talent alone. But it requires more than that.
Post-match, Megan Rapinoe said that was quadruply the amount of grit from the Spanish game she was talking about. And you have to give it up to France. They outplayed us in terms of having the ball. We were so good defensively. We took our chances and we hit them where it hurt. That final set, we hit them where it hurt. That's so Team USA, isn't it? And that's their danger. Two goals for Megan Rapinoe. That means she's now on 5 for this tournament. What an awesome game she had.
She's a very, very intelligent player, very clever player whenever you watch her. And she took her chance superbly, played well elsewhere on the pitch. And as we were saying, maybe she'll get the Congressional Medal of Honour from the President, who must be delighted at her performance for Team America.
Well, Megan Rapinoe is the third player to score 4 knockout stage goals at a single Women's World Cup, after USA's Michelle Akers was 7 in 91 and Carly Lloyd was 6 in 2015. And of course, there's nothing to say that Megan Rapinoe will not beat both those records. Who knows? We watched the USA switch to a 5-4-1 in the second half when it started to get a bit sticky for them and France started to come back. They soaked up the pressure and then they attacked on the counter. It looked odd at first from Jill Ellis, but actually, was it a genius move, Anita?
Definitely. I think she recognised that France had more possession and they needed to get a goal. So they were going to commit numbers forward, and the USA just needed to be disciplined defensively throughout the team and take their opportunities when it came. And they did that on the counter-attack, as we saw. And they were able to do that with 2 or 3 players at times in the attack and still hurt the French defence. So, yeah, tactically, it was a sound decision from Jill Ellis.
Well, you're impressed with the way Julie Ertz has dropped into the back 5. And seamlessly.
Exactly. And to having players that are versatile enough to do that and fulfill that role and responsibility for the team is super imperative. But it shows that the USA have this, you know, as part of one of their assets.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. Key players for you in this game, Anita, who really stood out for you on either side?
Oh, I mean, I have to say Crystal Dunn did a great job at fullback. You know, she had 2 extreme threats in the likes of Diani and later on, really late in the game, with Cascarino. Yeah. And she managed to nullify them pretty effectively. I think Alex Morgan, you know, to be fair to her, as a lone striker up there, can be very frustrating. And a player like that, you, with her quality, managed to stay in the game and just do what was required in terms of game management. Showed a professional performance. Same with Tobin Heath at times, just holding up the ball, knowing when to draw a foul, bide her team some time to get everyone up the pitch. These are, you know, key tenets to a team of this quality, and it shows that they have that experience and that mentality to carry those situations through.
So another question that's occurred to me after watching this game is whether the VAR review system is broken, because it's the second game in a row that we've seen no stops for a VAR review. And there was a clear penalty shout, right, Glenn? That was Madjuri's cross hitting the arm of Kelly O'Hara.
I think a week ago that was absolutely nailed on penalty. But for some reason, since they had a long discussion, a 90-minute press conference telling us it was all going perfectly well and as planned, the VAR interpretations appear to have changed slightly.
So we think this seriously. We think there has been some internal change to the VAR system.
We've seen this at World Cups before, where the refereeing changes during the tournament.
This is where Glenn is a seasoned veteran, by the way, listeners. He's sat here like he has got the face, like, I know what's happening here. I know what's happening behind the scenes. If I was FIFA, I would have to stick with it, because otherwise you're admitting that it's wrong, and then surely you're then saying that the games that have been played using it so far are not true representatives of how the rest of the tournament's going to play out.
Well, but FIFA would never admit this.
I realise this.
They just will, and they say, no, it all worked out exactly as planned.
Jackie Oatley's tweeted. She is the official rules tweeter, by the way, Jackie, setting everyone straight. This was nowhere near to being a penalty, as O'Hara's arm was by her side and didn't make her body bigger.
On one replay we saw there was a fractional movement towards the ball.
Well, this is, you know, the Twitter debates will go on. You know, some other people are saying, what's the difference between that and the Kumagai situation?
Kumagai one, yeah.
Especially when a player is in the box with at that range, at that distance, and the ball gets fired in your direction. I'm not really sure how you can adjust your body into a natural position per se, unless you're going to do some sort of matrix move.
I'm a big fan of the matrix move. I think too. I think it's definitely something that we could introduce.
It's something we're going to have to work on for sure. Yeah.
Emma's bought a whole load of bands to tie your defenders together for next season. Yeah.
I also like those sort of Scottish dancing style jumps where players are now holding onto the edge of their shorts, a bit like you would if you were Scottish dancing and you were holding your hands tight against your thighs and jumping up in a very high, pointy jump into the air. I like the fact that that's now being adopted by defenders in the box as well. Who knows what else is to come?
Just to go back to the O'Hara penalty situation, I don't think it was a penalty. I personally don't think it was a penalty anyway, but, you know, this is the issue.
I don't think it should be a penalty, but I think a week ago it would have been a penalty.
It would have been. Yeah, okay, fine.
Exactly.
All right, well, I'm glad that we've got that off our chests. We're delighted to say we're joined post-match by the Sunday Times' Rebecca Myers. Rebecca, a lot of excitement, obviously, before this game. Just describe how long the media queues were to get into the stadium.
Yeah, it was quite something. The England media sort of WhatsApp group was exploding with people warning each other, you know, what time to arrive and you're going to be late, and just complete chaos. And it really is, when you walked into that press room, apart from just being relieved at the aircon, it really was just a moment where you thought, my God, the whole world is here to see this. The whole world has sent their press for this extraordinary match.
Is that the most press that you've ever seen in a press room before a women's game before?
Yeah, it certainly is for me. I mean, I didn't go to Canada last year, so I have to say that I don't have that point of comparison, but it's the most I've seen for this World Cup. There were two full press rooms, which we just haven't seen anywhere else.
Well, and I'm sure it's incredibly busy post-match as well. What's the reaction been like from both sides?
So I've literally just come out the press conference with Corinne Diacre, the French coach. I mean, she really is this sort of impenetrable ice queen, really. Like, she was incredibly calm, incredibly composed, not emotional at all. And very frank. She said, this is a failure. How can it not be seen as a failure? It's not what we aim to do. It's not what we came here to do. It is a footballing failure. And I thought that was very, very brave.
Yeah.
The players were much more emotional, you know, far more tears on the pitch than we would ever see from her, I think. The Americans were elated. And honestly, you know, Jill Ellis, for all that she seems so incredibly confident 99% of the time, she did sort of puff her cheeks out at one point as if to say, thank God that's over.
Well, she changed her tactics, didn't she? She switched to a five-player back line, and Corinne Diacre, I know, referenced that and said, well, that's a sign that this France team is making progress if they're having to force the USA to switch tactics.
Yeah, she obviously looked worried. She was very, I mean, the whole team, they've got sort of a number of different coaches who shout from the sidelines, basically. And at one point, certainly from a scouting England point of view, it was quite interesting to see them raising this card, this kind of giant cardboard.
Yes, I saw that.
That said 4-1. So there's sort of consensus that this is 4-1, 4-1, and there. It's a drive to get the players back into the right kind of formation that she wants, yeah. But really interesting there.
Yeah. I also heard that Diakra said that despite the tournament being a failure for them, she said, "I hope we've attained something else elsewhere tonight. Hopefully we've won over the hearts and minds of public. Hopefully this will help the women's game go further." Just give me a little indication on how this tournament's captured the hearts of the French.
It really has. I mean, the atmosphere tonight, I mean, we knew it was going to be electric. We knew it was going to be wonderful, but the French were just superb. I mean, that goal from Wendy Renard, they completely lost it.
Yeah.
I was sitting quite close to this sort of two little boys, probably about 7 years old, who were just beside themselves. It was such a joy to see, because they're the future, and they're going to, you know, go on to presumably support women's teams without sort of batting an eyelid about that. So that was a real joy to see. I suppose from my point of view, I really hope that the French keep turning out. I really hope they keep attending matches.
Yes.
They have been a little bit poor on attending other teams' matches. All their own matches have been sold out, but not so much the other nations. So I'm hoping now that it's crunch time, they'll still buy tickets, they'll still come and support.
Thanks very much to the Sunday Times, Rebecca Myers, post-match there. OK, well, it's time to roll around in a little bit of England-associated glory. Team GB have qualified for Tokyo 2020 because France are out. So some good news there for the team, if it all happens, of course, if it all comes together and all the member associations join in.
And we have an Olympian in the room.
We have an Olympian in the room. This could be super exciting, right, Anita?
Amazing, amazing opportunity for whoever ends up being selected. Trust me, it's one of the best competitions in the world, and any players had that experience has said it's just unforgettable.
How did it change your view either on your career, or how did it impact your game? How did that experience add to you as a player?
I mean, obviously, just it being a home tournament as well, to have the whole nation behind us and really, you know, support us throughout the competition was unbelievable.
Yeah.
The atmosphere was incredible.
And the size of the crowds
the
as well.
The size
I'm
of
guessing,
the crowds
yeah.
were, yeah, just another level. And yeah. I think being around so many other athletes who work so hard for this one opportunity, you know, it comes around every 4 years to see what they put into it, and to learn and share stories and experiences is something you never get the opportunity to do as a footballer. You're always surrounded by other footballers. So to meet other athletes and other disciplines really helped me to like put in perspective what I do and how much more I could maybe give and sacrifice for myself to get to the levels I wanted to.
That's nice. All right. Well, listen, let's not get too excited about that yet, because there is the small matter of a semi-final against USA. How on earth do England approach this one?
Well, the one thing they have in their favour compared to, say, 3 or 4 years ago is they have beaten America relatively recently in one of the She Believes Cups. I think they won a couple of years ago. I see we've got Ellen White scoring in a freezing cold night somewhere. So they no longer will see the Americans, a bit like they no longer see Germany or France as well, as these super beings that they can't possibly beat. They feel they deserve to be in the same picture.
So that was 2017 when they won. They also drew against Team USA at this year's She Believes Cup as well. And that's good. But if you look at this year's She Believes Cup, the American team for me were just well below par. Let's look at what's happened in this tournament and the team that we are faced with right here, right now. Anita, how did England approach this?
Well, I think, you know, they're definitely going to go back and watch the games they've played USA before and try and identify where their weaknesses lie. And I think if we can improve on some of our performances where we've been sloppy in possession and stuff, we definitely have an opportunity to expose the US. But I think they really should feel confident enough to get into high pressure situations.
So England need to take the game to them.
Definitely. They need to not give them too much respect, basically, early on. I think the USA are aware that England are a good side. I don't think for 1 minute they think they're a walkover team anymore. They've encountered them enough now to know that. But if we can get into our forwards into high pressing situations and put their backs, you know, make them stress out a bit more where they're not as good on the ball, maybe in their distribution, I think that will really play in it to our advantages.
I don't think technically the Americans are any better than the English. Yeah, the
Americans, I agree with that.
America's strength has always been they roll over teams with a sheer athleticism to an extent, and we're now a very fit side. I do think I agree with Anita. The the high press on both sides were very important. When we conceded against America the She Blues this year, it's because we were trying to play the ball out the back and got caught. And they will press us and they will put our defenders under pressure. And we've also been a bit sloppy in possession sometimes. So that will be a big factor at both ends.
Well, we'll continue the build-up to that England-USA game. My God, it sounds so good already. In tomorrow's show, lots more to come on that one. Quick tweet here from Paul Hayward, though, of The Telegraph. It says, if Norway-England drew 7.6 million on TV, why shouldn't an England-USA semi attract 10 million viewers? Great game in Paris. You'd never guess it was 31 degrees. Megan Rapinoe's a folk hero. Interesting comments there from Paul. Well, we've still got two more quarterfinals to go, incredibly. The good football continues and we'll discuss them next.
Well, hello there, Offside Rulers. This is producer Ben from the Totally Football Show, suggesting, very politely, that when you're done with this latest episode of Kate & Co, that you should mosey on over to the award-winning Totally Football Show, where we have two podcasts for you every week throughout the summer. This week, you can hear us lamenting Newcastle's decision to part ways with Rafa Benitez.
It's not just bad for Newcastle, it's bad for football as a whole. It is the whole idea of, we can do the right thing, but how much money would it cost?
We've got Julien Laurent on Neymar's future, or lack thereof, at PSG.
For him not to say, I regret leaving Barcelona, and he implemented the whole move. It was nothing to do with PSG at the start. And now they're very much open to him going anywhere he wants. If he wants to go back to Barcelona, go to United, go to Real Madrid, go to anywhere. Because I think they really want to build their team now around Kylian Mbappe.
And we've got updates from the Copa America, the Africa Cup of Nations, and the Under 21 Euros. So search for The Totally Football Show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, at all the usual places. Keep up to date with what we're doing at The Totally Show.
You're listening to the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition. Myself, Kate Borsay, joined in the studio by Glenn Moore and Anita Asante. We are now going to look ahead, my lovely people, Italy versus the Netherlands. And everybody, it's back. Yes, that's right. The Dutch are still dancing left to right, but only just after a contentious, but within the new rules, handball penalty saw the Netherlands progress through to the quarterfinals. Italy are everyone's favourite underdog, like the mint Viennetta ice cream you never knew tasted so good. Both sides looking to reach the Women's World Cup semi-finals for the first time. But who will do it, Anita Asante?
You know what? I actually believe Italy have a great chance to progress. I really do. After watching the Netherlands against Japan, where I felt they were a little lackluster and they didn't really take the game to Japan. Of course, Japan were exceptionally good, I thought, on the ball and in possession, but they didn't show the kind of display that we were expecting. And Italy, I think, have had such good momentum and shown that they have really good attacks, really dynamic attacks as well. I think they could cause some problems for the Netherlands.
The Netherlands also have a good attack. So that's a plus on both sides. So are we looking at a goal fest here, or will they be so interested in nullifying each other that we may struggle to get anything at all?
Well, it might get a bit cagey. Quarter final, quite a lot at stake. We need an early goal. But then again, we had an early goal tonight and it was cagey for large parts of America sitting deep. The Dutch have the experience of winning and they've got better as the tournament's worn on. I think the Italians have been the surprise package of the tournament. The tournament, you would say, has largely been predictable in terms of had you gone into it, who win this game, who win that game. I don't think there's been many real surprises. Italy have been the surprise team.
Well, Serena Weidman, who's the Netherlands coach, has said, we've been very impressed by Italy, but we also know what consequences their playing style has and where spaces open up on the pitch. Just take us through this one, because actually I think Italy have been impressive defensively as well.
Yeah, I think they've been quite solid, actually. But of course, I mean, when Netherlands are at their best, they have the pace, especially from their wide players, to hurt fullbacks and centre-backs. And if they do that, they can really cause problems for Italy. But, you know, Italy have come in largely as underdogs in every game. And I think that's helped them to just stick to their game plan, execute it, and it's proven to be successful. So I can't imagine them detracting from that, really. And they have all the belief and confidence, really, to go into this game.
Some great goal scorers as well. The Netherlands are sweating on the fitness of Lieke Martin, someone that you've played with, Anita. She sat out training today with a painful foot injury. As far as we know, we don't have an update on her. Will she be a big loss for the Netherlands, or do they have enough to simply cope pretty well without her?
I mean, if you judge the last game against Japan, she wasn't as influential as she has been. And, you know, the likes of Van der Donk really stepped up and was the creative force for them. So I think the Dutch side actually will be able to cope without Lieke, but she definitely adds a lot to this attacking, their attacking play.
And she did score both goals.
Yeah.
Well, well, without playing particularly brilliantly, she scored both goals.
Yes. So. And that foot injury picked up while she was celebrating the late winner against Japan. Well, for more from an Italian perspective, producer Abby caught up with Lucia Parola, women's football journalist for Radio Rossonara.
I think we have great hope in this team because we did so much until this very point. And we can do so much more. But at the same time, I know that Netherlands are a great team. They have a great attack, and this can be a weapon against Italy. But I think that the show can be very, very, very great.
Sara Gamma has been speaking in the pre-match press conference, and she said that the Italians are perhaps a little tired. Do you agree with what she's saying, and how, or do you think that she's trying to play down how the Italians might be feeling?
Honestly, I think she's right, because I have seen the players very tired as well. In particular, Barbara Boransea and Girelli, I think they look very tired. But it may be because of the previous matches we played. In particular, the one against Australia was very tiring for them. And also everything more psychological, more mental related can be very tired. But I'm not so sure that this is an element that can bring us down or can prevent us from giving our best in this match.
Do you think that we might see a few changes then to the starting lineup? Perhaps we'll see the Aurora Galli starting for Italy.
Well, there are two points of view about Aurora Galli, I think. The first one is that she is, of course, one of our best players, but at the same time, she scored three goals in this tournament, and all three of them, she scored them as a sub-in player. So I don't know if this means something, but if it does, she can be a sub-in player and not play from the first minute. But I think she will play, because Aurora Galli, Cernoia and Giuliano are the best player Italy have, and I think they will play from the start.
Lucia Parola there. And here's a nice point. The Italian team is known as the Cinderellas, and 4.6 million people was the average audience watching Italy's victory over China. So really good to see that the women's game is picking up across the continent after kind of a couple of decades, really, of it sort of being a bit fallow. We'll wait and see if the fairy tale continues. Donc laisse-moi te chanter. In the other quarterfinal to take place on Saturday, Germany take on Sweden, and Hannah Glass and Peter Gerhardsen were the only Swedes who travelled to the stadium today, and with 45 degree temperatures, they didn't stay out on the pitch for very long. This is going to be an absolute scorcher. Germany has made the semi-finals in every Women's World Cup and is the favourite in this tie then to do it against a Swedish side that has at times struggled in attack. And look, there's history. Germany are Sweden's bogey team. Since the Women's World Cup final in 2003, when Sweden conceded the lead and lost out to a golden goal from Germany, the Swedes have never won a major game against the team since. So will Sweden be packing their bags again, Glenn?
Probably, yes.
Oh, it's killed it again.
I'm afraid, yes. I'm not expecting this to be a great game, to be honest. So who knows, it may be a brilliant match. But Germany have done enough and gradually got better and better. Sweden are very solid, very organised, as Scandinavian teams tend to be. But you do wonder where they're going to get the goals to come from.
I would agree with you. I think Germany are that type of team that no matter the talent coming through, they know what legacy is behind them. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like what they have to fulfill. And they find a way to win somehow.
It's kind of annoying sometimes.
It really is. And it's just frustrating. But obviously the Swedes are very aware of the historic battle that they have. And I agree with Glenn. I think they've really struggled to create clear-cut opportunities or capitalise off of them, at least. And that's going to be quite difficult to see. I don't think this game is going to be exciting, but I hope it is. I hope we're, you know, proven wrong.
This is a repeat of the final of the Rio Olympics, isn't it? Which Germany won.
Yes. Let's talk Marijan. Broken toe. Can you play with a broken toe? Because she, you know, according to some of the pre-match bump for today, she's fit and ready to play. Is that right? Can you be?
Not that I'm aware of. I don't know anyone that's ever managed to play football with a broken toe, but unless there's some sort of new medical science that proves that you can do that.
Well, if there is, the Germans have probably invented it, yeah, Anita. So, you
know. I suppose you could strap it in a painkilling jab. I mean, depends how it goes.
But risk, isn't it?
It is quite a large risk. But if you're 20 minutes to go, 1-0 down, and your best player is there saying, give it a go, you might try it.
Martina Vos Tecklenburg has said that Marijan will be in the squad. There is no additional danger. The toe is broken. It will stay broken. It's about showing your will on the pitch, and Zenzi is willing. I'm not sure about that. Meanwhile, Sweden have been struck with hay fever. Apparently, Hedvig's got pollen allergy. And because of the heat, there's a lot of pollen in the air right now. But there's no risk that the allergy will affect Hedvig's possibilities to play tomorrow, says the Sweden team doctor.
I mean, we all know hay fever is an absolute menace. So, yeah, you know, that's terrible. But I think Hedvig's been outstanding for this Swedish side, actually. And obviously she pulled off that amazing penalty save in the last game. And I think she's a leader, you know, with a wealth of experience, especially playing against Germany. Hopefully she'll lead from the back, the team. And she's definitely a player they can rely upon.
They do have a good spine. I mean, Lindahl, Fischer, Sager, Jakobsen, they've got a good spine to them, Sweden.
But you're still not expecting anything from them?
No, but I don't think they'll roll over. I mean, I think Germany will win, but I think it will be tight. So who knows, you get a decision go your way.
I think they'll be solid defensively. Yeah. They're quite difficult to break down and score goals against. But I just think that, you know, Germany will find a way, you know, if it's not from set pieces or crossing the ball into players like Pop, who's always a threat in the box, that they'll find another way. But Germany are going to have to be at their best too, I think, to break down that defence.
Well, out in France to commentate on this Germany-Sweden game, it's Robin Cowan. Robin, how the devil are you in all that heat?
It's incredible. Honestly, I've never witnessed or felt anything like it. Just stepping out of the hotel room, it hits you like a punch in the face.
How are you keeping cool?
I've got nothing. I'm open to suggestions. Seriously, it's just incredible. I mean, and that's just me walking a couple of yards outside a hotel room. I cannot imagine even walking about in it for 90 minutes, let alone running. I mean, it's just insane.
I should ask Anita Asante, what's the hottest conditions that you've ever played in?
I think China.
Which was?
2007.
Can you remember how hot it was?
Oh, I think it was in the high 30s.
You have beaten Anita Asante, Robin, because yeah, I know it's higher than the late 30s. Thank goodness you don't have to play a game of football. Unlike the Swedes and the Germans.
That's good news for everyone.
Unlike the Germans and the Swedes, who, I mean, is the heat going to affect this game massively? Are we going to see a much slower pace of game? I mean, these aren't, you know, particularly fast-paced teams, either of them anyway, are they?
No, that's right. There's not really a lot of pace, really, from either of them. So I think commentary code cagey. I think it may be a little bit dull. We'll have to see. I mean, you can't
sell it, Robin.
I mean, the conditions, they're human, that you can't say it's not going to affect them. It's going to affect me. It's going to affect my brain. So I think it is going to be interesting, because Germany, I've done a couple of their games now, and they've got the job done without looking very convincing. They've managed to get through, and they've also managed to not concede a single goal. Interestingly, the Swedish manager, Peter Gerhardsen, in his press conference ahead of the game, has said that he believes that basically it's a false statistic. He believes that they face sides who have not been clinical against them. And I'd actually be inclined to agree with him. They've given up a lot of chances because of mistakes, and they've just had opposition who haven't got their shooting boots on. Now, Sweden, they don't look great in terms of up front, in terms of in front of goal either. So they're really going to have to take their chances when they come. I do believe they will have a few, though.
How are you expecting this one to go? I mean, does this have a Germany win all over it? Is that why it's perhaps going to be a little bit predictable?
I'd love to say that Sweden do have a chance. I think they genuinely do, but then it's Germany, isn't it? And you know, it's the old Gary Lineker quote, you know, they'll run around and then the Germans will win. And when you think about how Martina Vos Tecklenburg, it's only her, I think it'll be her ninth game in charge in total. It's really quite impressive, isn't it? When you consider she's barely been there.
What about fans? Are you seeing lots of fans over there in Rennes? Do you think lots of Germans have hopped over the border?
I hope so, yeah. It remains to be seen. But fans generally, the work we've seen, obviously haven't been full stadiums, but the fans who have turned up have been absolutely brilliant. So yes, fingers crossed we get a good atmosphere in Rennes, although the heat may put pay to that as well. We'll have to see.
You're going to have to do something. Is your commentary position, does it have any air conditioning? No.
No, I'm presuming not. I've just been informed that it's changed. So I'm just hoping that doesn't mean changed as in like gone into the sunshine.
Direct sunlight.
So we'll have to wait and see.
Oh my goodness, Robin. I suggest, I don't have any suggestions for you apart from maybe afterwards they'll allow you to jump in an ice bath.
Normally I think used Zurich by the players. Would be nice, actually.
You could actually commentate. If they can set up a TV for you, you could just commentate from the ice bath position, couldn't you?
Well, that would be ideal, yeah. I don't like to be too demanding, but is that too much to ask, really?
I don't think so.
Well, a swimming pool is like the cricket they have in Barbados.
Oh, yes. I fancy that, just in the swimming pool.
Yeah, why not? Why not? Let's just move the whole game. Robin Cowan, thank you very much for talking to us. I know it's late over there. Best of luck for the game, and I hope you survive without melting into a skin-type puddle.
Me too. Thank you very much.
Robin Cowan commentating on the game for the BBC. Thanks very much to her. All right, a double header of predictions then, please, people. So let's go Germany-Sweden, Glenn Moore.
I'm going to go for Germany 1-0. And I think it's very much a game where whoever scores first will quite possibly win it, simply because it's going to be very hard work trying to get an equaliser and trying to get a winner if you've gone behind. The hottest I can think of a game I saw, and that was England against Nigeria in Osaka in the 2002 World Cup. It was unbelievably hot and it was goalless. And it was a group game where neither side were that bothered about winning and both sides basically walked through the game. But obviously this time someone has to win.
Anita, Germany, Sweden?
Oh, you took my prediction right out of my mouth. I think I'm going to go Germany 2-1. I think Sweden might get a late goal.
Okay. Let's go Italy, Netherlands, Glenn.
I think that's a very hard one to call.
I think so. I think you're right.
I think Holland might edge it simply because they've been there before. But I can see goals, 2-1, 3-2.
Important to say that Holland haven't been here at this tournament before.
No, and that might play in their mind. They will have a lot of support, though. The Dutch are travelling in huge numbers for this tournament, which will help. And it's only 2 years ago that they won the Euros. And as the tournament's gone, they've started to get a bit better, though they were very lucky to get past Japan.
You're even talking me into it now. Anita?
I'm going to go Italy 2-1.
Good. Okay, I like it. Thank you very much. Well, we'll see what happens on Saturday as the final games of the quarterfinals take place. Until our next podcast, we're on social media. It's at Offside Rule Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Plus, we have a website, offsiderulepodcast.com. Loads of great reviews of the various stages of this tournament, player analysis and everything else. Anita and Glenn, this is your last show. Both of you. Anita, we're losing you to France next week. All the glamour of the semi-finals and the finals, and you're whipping off on the first Eurostar. Getting yourself out of this basement. I don't know why. Glenn, you're going to be going out for the final as well.
I'm indeed, yes. I hope it cools down a little bit.
I don't, because I'm jealous of you both, and I shall sit here with my air conditioning and my large fan in my face. Well, listen, enjoy your time out in France and Lyon as well, and please make sure that Lindsay Hooper's okay. I'm worried about how many baguettes she's been consuming. Listeners, we will speak again tomorrow. For now, au revoir.
The Offside Rule Women's World Cup Edition is a Muddy Knees Media production in association with Spotify.